I started recording before you launched into that. So, no, we're not actually going to talk about that. How great it is to have college football.
Owned.
Baby.
Owned.
Well, I'll come back in about 10 minutes when you're done fondling yourselves.
How about them Seminoles?
Are we talking about the Noles?
Paul.
Paul? They got a black Italian out there, and they got Gus on the sideline.
Now the championship coming down to Central Florida, baby.
North Florida, not Central Florida.
Yeah, whatever. It's all fucking Florida. I mean,
North Florida is Ohio, or Central Florida is Ohio. North Florida is the South.
We are all running a little ragged today in the wake of the Seminoles' victory over Alabama, because Low Tax has been blasting the group chat every 35 minutes on the dot.
Yep. Elation doesn't cover it. Elation just doesn't even... this man... there's only one thing that could have happened that would make this man happier, and it almost happened this week.
Beat that ass.
Are we done yet?
No, Ed. We're going to be talking about college football for a bit here, buddy.
All right. Well, you guys have fun.
Take your Diet Pepsi. Go let your dog out so it can have a diarrhea all over the backyard. Hose that down. Come on back. I just... there is something so comforting about there being a bunch of dumb stuff happening on the gridiron on a Saturday and having that back. And I didn't watch a ton this weekend for reasons we'll get into later, but gosh, watching Alabama just flounder around, watching Texas just flounder around.
God, that game was awful.
It was so bad, including... Look, if you're a college football coach, you have a certain position in the local political economy. It's like being the mayor of a small town. And in some cases, it's actually much of a bigger deal. It's like being the mayor of a medium-sized city. So with that context, what would possess a college football coach to wear a synthetic fabric polo that clings to his chest to the point that his nipple rings are visible? I do not know. And we are talking, of course, about Ohio State head coach Ryan Day.
What was going on with the waterfall coming off the nipple ring there? That was weird.
A lot of weird stuff going on in Columbus, actually.
I like to think that Ryan Day, so everybody wanted to fire him after that Michigan game last year. Because the man just loves losing to Michigan and driving his boosters up the wall. And I said, y'all remember, I said in December, y'all watch, Ohio State's going to win the whole thing and no one's going to be happy about it, including Ohio State fans. And sure enough, they went out and won the whole thing. And I like to think that Ryan Day got that nipple ring after winning the championship, because now he is untouchable. Like, you can't fire me. I'm going to do whatever the hell I want, and I'm going to make all these demands of you. Like, I'm asking, if I'm him, I'm asking for, first of all, $12 million a year over at least 10 years. I'm asking for, like, an aircraft carrier for recruiting.
Prima Nocta with every booster's wife.
Yes.
And with the nipple rings, I mean, you know, that's actually not that far from of a joke as it could be for certain other personalities. the other way you know that it's going to be a rough season in terms of Ohio State doing well is Michigan scored on a forward pass this week, which shouldn't be legal, but is, unfortunately, as well. And so that's how you know. It's not going to be a fun season for anyone that comes down on the big blue side of that rivalry.
I mean, I think Ohio State is the only team in the Big Ten that's allowed to throw forward passes.
I think they let Indiana do it once in a while just for fun. And then it always just means an interception. But
they can only do it against Ohio State because every 3 or 4 years.
Right. Yeah.
Every 3 or 4 years, Indiana's allowed to beat Ohio State. And no one has any explanation for it. It's sort of like Florida State and NC State.
Yeah. Speaking of triangle football dynasties, Duke Blue Devils, the Fighting Manny Diaz's, off to a 1-0 start, managed to put the whooping on Elon after
managed to overcome the historic power that is Elon University.
And before, again, if you're not a college sports person or a North Carolinian, before you say, wait, is this a joke? Did they play Elon Musk's alma mater or something? No. Elon is a school. It's a school that west of Durham, in between Greensboro and Durham. It's in the middle of nowhere, off I-40. It's real. It's a place. People live there.
It's for people who think that Winston-Salem is too Jewish or something.
It's like Wake Forest, but everyone's gotten much worse grades. That's a fair thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and hopefully they don't run that obnoxious mesh offense thing that Wake runs too.
No, their quarterback actually played pretty good. I only watched the first half because, again, we'll get to it later. But yeah, their quarterback played pretty well. They had a couple guys who could play, but I mean, they're not a good team. So our week one win is nothing like the glory that was the Seminoles.
That's right. I mean, nobody's was, to be fair.
Yeah. I mean, what are they singing in Tuscaloosa, Alabama this weekend?
Kill the Boar?
Kill the Boar. You want to explain that joke?
Sure. It's better if you don't.
Again, not an Elon Musk reference. Totally separate thing.
Yeah, don't ask Grok anything about this. Oh, we got a snort.
Oh. Florida State has been banned from Twitter for killing DeBoer.
So, Alabama's head coach's last name is DeBoer, DeBoer. I don't know if he's actually of South African stock or not, but the performance was so woeful this weekend that the boosters down Tuscaloosa are trying to kill DeBoer.
He's going to have to be a refugee the other way.
Alabama's going to spend $70 million to resettle him.
Okay. Ed, I mean, you took your break and you came back in a much better mood, buddy. I'm glad timeout worked out for you.
No, I just, who can pass up the opportunity to not, and I repeat, not under any circumstances, not make fun of Elon Musk? Who? I ask you, who?
I bet we could convince Alabama fans that Elon is behind it.
Well, they can't read.
We can flip the state.
They don't have the presence of mind to ask Grok if it's true.
They don't even have a touch screen phone, man. They're rocking consumer cellular push button stuff from their RV. Not even a trailer, just an RV.
No, just straight up Flintstones shit. They're like wrapping their knuckles off of a chunk of slate.
Paul, that rocket guy killing our team.
And meanwhile, we're not talking about Alabama in general, because the Auburn fans are the ones from the gated communities. They're a different breed.
I love, by the way, that Auburn
lizard people,
the Auburn fans are all lovey dovey with Gus Malzahn right now. And Gus is Florida State's offensive coordinator, who they brought in this year and was previously the Auburn head coach. And Auburn fans, when he was there, absolutely despised him.
Previously and infamously.
Yes. Like every year it was, are they going to fire him? And then he would somehow win the Iron Bowl.
Is there anybody in college football that looks more like he was recruited out of the Nazis aerospace program to come work at NASA than Gus Malzahn? With the little mini glasses.
And the hat.
The whole thing.
Visor.
All the goofy trick plays trying to get someone into low Earth orbit.
Oh, wow. You weren't kidding. Like, I'm
he's got some Wernher von Braun energy here.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, until you hear him talk.
Yeah.
Because he is a hick from Arkansas. So
he just got an industrial sized barrel of hair gel and went to town.
Well, to the extent he's got hair left.
I'm just over here going, wow, what a hairman.
I loved this.
Also, he's from Texas, apparently. So, you know.
Oh, that's right. He is from Texas. Although, I think he went to college at Arkansas or something.
And Henderson State.
Which I have never heard of.
I'm not going to click on that. I don't want to know. This is already too much college football for me.
I love there was a post from Spencer Hall of the Shutdown Fullcast saying, Gus Malzahn is beating the Alabama defense over the head with a high school playbook right now. And there was a response from a guy named Matt DeMondren, who is an Alabama alum, and said, this is the same shit he used to do against Saban. Saban would be like, we've created this complex, intricate defense with seven linebackers looping in and out of 12 different zones. And Gus Malzahn will respond, quarterback sneak.
As very normal men, it is very nice to have dumb sports stuff that we enjoy as background noise to our sometimes frustrating existence and a very frustrating news slate to take our mind off things for a while. So thank you for humoring us in doing so.
Don't worry to all of the actually normal men. We will eventually get back to hockey season.
I was going to say, poor Ed is suffering right now. We got no hockey going on.
This is Normal Men, a podcast from four men who are clinging desperately to normalcy in an era when that's asking a bit too much. I'm George in Charlotte.
This is Proctor Malone in Washington, D.C.
I'm low-tech speedrun enjoyer in outer Florida.
I'm Ed from Boston.
The news has not been all bleak, however. We've had a couple of bright spots in the last week. Number one, Joni Ernst is out for the Iowa Senate race. She's decided to spend more time, I guess, trying to have sex with senior military officers. That seems like her thing.
Did you bring that up first just so you could go there?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely, I did. Anyway, I think this is actually probably bad for the Democratic chances of taking the Iowa Senate seat, but it does remove incumbency advantage, and they're going to have to run somebody who has not run statewide before. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Do we know who any of the likely...
The name escapes me, but there's a youngish 40-something congresswoman from one of the relatively swing districts there. Who is their likely nominee. I don't think anything's set in stone yet.
I ask just because if you take a random shuffle of GOP primary electorates statewide across the country, the person they're going to replace incumbent with is going to be a lunatic. So, I mean, Iowa, that may not be the case, but, you know.
Yeah, I think this is, if it's who I'm thinking of, and again, the name escapes me, but it's somebody kind of more in the Katie Britt mold. Than in the psycho mold, whatever you think of Katie Britt, her reputation was as a relative moderate when she ran for the Bama Senate seat.
How's that going for her?
Mississippi Senate seat. Anyway, we'll see.
No,
we'll see.
Alabama.
Was it Bama?
Yeah.
Okay.
Paul.
We'll see what happens there. I'm not entirely confident they're going to be able to clear the field for somebody moderate. You know, the state politics have a voice here too.
Bring on the maniacs.
That electorate in the primary is not the same as the general election.
Give us the crazy bastards.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know anything about the Iowa GOP, too. There are still relatively red states with relatively not MAGA political machines. So, you know, I mean, my state isn't one of them, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think they have a shot at getting somebody who's a relatively normal candidate through, but... I haven't seen anything like fundraising numbers. Ernst stepping out is very new, so it's not really clear how the field is developing or who wants to take a whack at it. There are definitely factions within the Republican majority in the state house who would be a tougher sell statewide than the moderates. And You know, the Democratic candidate's not set either. It's really a wide open race, and it's going to be one of, I think, the big storylines for the 2026 elections is going to be how that develops.
Speaking of fundraising, the Senate candidate up in Maine had an excellent start by the looks of things. Graham Planter says,
"Oyster guy."
It's Planter. Am I remembering that correctly?
Platner.
Sorry.
Getting off by one.
Swaps. Yeah.
Okay. The Oysterman, we'll call him. He raised $1 million in his first week, which is pretty good for a guy who had no institutional backing that I'm aware of. I think that's basically all small dollar donations.
Yeah.
It is relatively easy for somebody coming in against a big Republican name to rack up money, but I think this is still a really strong performance, and we may be watching kind of a star be born up in Maine right now.
Yeah, he's got 80 cents per person right now.
Yeah, not bad. You know, there's some energy there that he's captured. This is somebody who's running under what I think I would describe as an unapologetically populist message, but it's a very liberal populism. It's a very left liberal populism.
I don't think we've seen a candidate with his specific dynamic before, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, in a relatively swingy state. So we've seen, I think West Virginia's had a couple guys come out of that state that have run for statewide office or gotten some national attention and have been kind of in this mold, but were always super, super long shots. Maine is not like West Virginia. West Virginia in some very specific ways that we're not going to beat Ed over the head with too hard right now.
No, I'm joining you on this. I'm from the civilized part.
There is a civilized part, therefore it's not like West Virginia. But I can't recall a candidate that, you know, the typical populist gender dude, insurgent Democrat guy like Platner is somebody.
Capital who G is, guy.
Yeah.
Capital G. We are firmly in capital G guy territory.
Yes. Is somebody somebody who's going to have populist messages on a bunch of stuff, but they're not going to hit every single check mark for the broad left coalition. And Platner seems to be doing that. I haven't seen anyone look at his platform and go, yeah, well, he's not great on X.
Yeah.
A super, super big union guy. He talks about corporate power. He talks about the rich needing to pay more. He talks about universal healthcare. He talks about Medicare for all. He talks about trans rights. He talks about all this stuff, and he's unapologetic about it. And that's at the very least unusual.
He is. And the interesting thing, I mean, like, he's going to do very well, I think, just because the way he talks will work very well in Maine. Maine is very strange and swingy in some ways. Like, they really like their decorum pilled. I guess you can call Angus King a person, but it's either that or Meat Robot. But they also do like somebody who says the word we bleep a lot, and I don't mean British. But at the same time, I definitely get the vibe that he is more practical than most of these loud yelling people, which is great. They're also going to hate him in 6 months, maybe a year. But like, I do think that he has a really good chance of dealing with like normal people. There is more room for guys in Maine than the decorum pilled. We are the strong, sober, thoughtful people of Hannibal Hamlin. Fuck off. That Maine has always done for politics, right? Like, Maine politics are stupid. It's a lot of people who are all playing debate club in a state of 1.2 million people. And like, in that light, somebody who's just going to go, no, those guys suck, is going to do really, really well, especially when like these policies start to really bite, which is going to happen soon.
I will say about Maine, though, like, you can't say they're decorum pilled because Trump has won one of the electoral votes out of Maine. And that was not
Paul LePage got elected as governor.
Yeah, yes. I think that's the better data point.
But like, they've also been, you know, like the state's ongoing and confusing love affair with Susan Collins has been going on my entire life.
Like, exasperating.
And before her Olympia Snow, the Snow was a little more normal. I don't understand. You kind of have to wonder if some parts of that electorate are responsive to stimuli.
But like also, stimuli.
Yeah.
Like, are they biological organisms that...
Yeah, like, do they understand that they have been cattle prodded? Because that happened in the first Trump administration as well. And I don't think what's going on right now is going to be really great for a state whose entire thing is tourism with a soup con of logging. It's probably not a good time. And like, somebody like Plattner is perfectly positioned to talk a lot of shit, parentheses, laudatory, about all of this, right? Like, there are people in various federal roles that can speak authentically to stuff like this, but not that many. And not really any from New England that I can think of. I mean, I'm sure maybe there's like some wild-assed House of Representatives, I don't know, pick probably like Western Massachusetts. they have ill people there. But yeah, like, this is going to be really interesting just because I want to see somebody actually like say all of the things we all think to Susan Collins' face. It's going to be a good time.
One thing to keep in mind about Maine is that in addition to electing sort of oddball Republicans that are kind of throwbacks like Snow and Collins, is that Maine has not elected a Democrat to the Senate since 1988. Angus King is caucuses with the Democrats, but he is notably not a Democrat. So they kind of like these iconoclastic oddballs, and I think Plattner's got that going for him. One thing that's sort of interesting for him, to my mind, is that if you look at these other candidates who come from a military background, Plattner served first in the Marines and then was Army National Guard. These tend to be guys who come through the ROTC program, or girls who come through the ROTC program. There's plenty of female candidates who come up through the military also, for whom the participation is post-collegiate in the military. And Plattner's the other way around. He enlisted straight out of high school and then came back and flirted with college, let's say, on the GI Bill, which is, I think, a more relatable story in a lot of ways than, you know, ROTC at an elite institution. It definitely casts the relationship of the military to his biography differently. I think he's a fascinating candidate, and I wish him all the best in that primary. There's a number of other candidates, so I don't think he's anything like a lock, but the energy around him is really something cool.
I haven't actually even seen. Are there any notable candidates coming out? I should know this being from Maine, but it's a primary.
Katie Porter's former chief of staff, if memory serves, is in there. He also raised a million and change. I'm not sure how much of that was small dollar versus big dollar. And, you know, we're still waiting to see whether or not the governor gets involved.
The only person on this entire list, I just pulled it up, that I recognize is the governor. Everyone else is like, who? And like, I think that will probably hold for a lot of people, which makes Plattner really interesting. Because
name recognition is the whole thing.
Yeah, because like, let's go down the list. I'm not going to go with the names because I will mispronounce all of them. Fashion designer, consultant, and former deputy secretary of the Maryland Department of the Environment, cybersecurity professional, former chief of staff to U.S. Representative Katie Porter, and then like brewery owner. Which,
yeah, on point. That sounds like Maine.
But yeah. But like the person with the highest name recognition that has publicly expressed interest is the former Speaker of the Maine House. And I don't think that any time I lived there, and like I was a nerd, come on, I don't think I could have told you who was the Speaker of the Maine House of Representatives at any point. There is negative name recognition for some of these. And so like what, Mills and the Sullivan Harbor Master? Right. Yeah, that's going to be a thing. He has I bet he has a real shot.
It's interesting too to see some of the pushback from certain quarters of the chattering classes on this, where I think people got really burned by Fetterman especially. Mm-hmm. And are like, let's not do a Fetterman again, which look, yeah, fair. Let's not do a Fetterman again. There's nothing in this guy's whole deal that makes him sound to me like Fetterman, other than, oh, he's like an aggressive talking dude, right? He's not previously an elected official, unlike Fetterman. He doesn't have the baggage that came with that. For instance, a certain shotgun incident with a certain minority family. Fetterman was much less, as I said earlier, across the board hitting all the boxes that I think people with broadly the four of our politics want to see hit, if possible. And I think it's interesting to see folks pushing back just out of what appears to be pure risk aversion of getting burned, when if we want to make inroads with low propensity voters and low info voters, you're going to have to take some risks on candidates. There's just no other way to do it. There's just no...
I'm sorry. This guy's from Sullivan?
Main geoheads are flipping out in the comments.
There's like 800 people. I assumed it was mostly farm animals.
I mean, it probably is.
So for real, Sullivan is it is a harbor town. They do technically do boats there. It's between three other towns no one else in Maine has ever heard of, right? Like, the only way you would know it is if you had ever driven Route 1 for an unhealthy distance. And I'm just like, They found a person there.
So this guy's a harbor master from Darkest Maine.
He's not from Nova Scotia. We're sure about that. Actually, I guess he's New Brunswick, not Nova Scotia. What am I talking about?
He does seem to speak English, but New Brunswick has a little bit of both.
See, you can't keep up with those little Canadian provinces either, George. And you were born in the damn country,
man. The Maritimes are different.
It blows my mind just because, like, so a couple of towns over from that is where we used to go in the dead of winter in college because they wouldn't check IDs. They were just happy to see someone. So, like, that's the part of Maine we're talking about here. And I have now gone from tentatively, yeah, sure, to this guy needs to win. Because I don't think anyone has seen a person from this part of Maine leave the state in at least a generation.
Like, you figure that's probably worth a good bit of margin, just saying, I'm from Sullivan, and everyone in Maine goes,
well, no, really? Because the next question is, what's that?
Yes.
but then you say, you know, it's outside of Ellsworth, and they go, oh, okay. And, you know, follow-up questions, discourage them.
These are all towns I have never heard of.
Yeah, they're all in what is used to be Charmingly and now is internet, unfortunately, known as the Mid-Coast. So, yeah.
Well, he's definitely got Netroots excitement on his side. I haven't seen any polling on that race, and my guess is that we're not going to see any public polling for a long time. Maine is traditionally somewhat difficult to poll.
Yeah,
It's tiny, as we've been saying.
So, we're not really going to have a good sense of how he's standing other than fundraising and excitement, and maybe other than whether or not Mills gets in. You have to figure Mills is the favorite in the primary if she jumps in. She's old is the big knock against her. She's 77.
The thing is, Maine hates their governors. Like that's just a thing, right? Like, they...
I mean, you guys elected Angus King. He was governor, right?
He's been there a long time. But, like... Her primary claim to fame is not being Paul LePage. And to be fair, saying some shit to Donald Trump, which, good. But like, and I should caveat, I do not live in Maine anymore. I just talk to a lot of people who do. So I'm not really the senior Maine correspondent. I'm just sort of a relay. But I don't know anyone who likes Janet Mills. Like, she's just there. And that seems to happen a lot in Maine politics, right? Sometimes they go the other way. John Baldacci became governor afterwards. I suppose I should... That would be my commencement speaker, John Baldacci. Big news. But it's Maine. You don't have a lot of choices. It's him or Stephen King, and Stephen King was probably busy. Yeah, like, I just don't... I don't know if she has anyone who likes her, whereas this guy, when you listen to him talk, people like him. And I think that counts for a lot in a state where you can kind of still do retail politics if you are willing to drive a lot.
I mean, it's not that big of a state Ed.
It's a very large state. It just doesn't have any people in it.
No, they lie about the size of states up there with those maps.
Yeah, they really do. They really do. I've driven the length of Maine before. I was about 10. I wasn't actually behind the wheel. But
I was going to say, follow-up questions?
Connecticut is the size of Texas, and I don't care what anybody says. I've been
Connecticut
to
isn't even the size of the Dallas-Fort Worth metro, man. Like, you can literally overlay it, and DFW goes from Fairfield all the way up to the border with Rhode Island.
I took the Amtrak from Alexandria, Virginia to Providence one time for a conference, and I think half the trip was going through Connecticut, because the train just sort of follows the coast there, so it's not like a really direct route.
Were you on Shoreline East somehow?
What?
The Metro North equivalent in southeastern Connecticut is a rail line called Shoreline East. And if you're ever on there, you're either on the way to a really, really beautiful weekend on a beach somewhere, or you made a horrible, horrible choice. One of those two outcomes. It's the only way you get onto Shoreline East.
I don't know. It was just the standard Amtrak train, and it took like 3.5 hours to get through freaking Connecticut.
And I would just like to state for the record that Maine is a sizable proportion of every state worth being in.
What does sizable proportion mean?
At least a third. people do think, I would not want to be driving around Maine as a Senate candidate. Let's put it that way. Because those are very long drives.
It's about the people you're interacting with on a given long drive, right?
Yeah. I mean, you might get real familiar with I-95.
It's the 12th smallest state in the union, man.
I did say of all of the states worth being in.
What are we doing here?
Look, John Tester was in Montana. This dude can suck it up.
It's only 31,000 square miles. Like, what?
Yeah. What's your
Most
point?
Most of it coastline.
Yeah. And most of it, again, coastline. So it's a little line. You just go back and forth, up and down the line.
So you actually, well, you might be able to get away with that. But the paper country does have a few sizable outposts.
Yeah. So you take a couple detours here and there. But the most
8,000 people is nothing to shake a stick at in a state that size.
Okay. So hang on. Back up. How many people live in Maine? You said 1.2 million?
Something like that.
And how many of them are in the Portland area?
A lot.
Like a third.
Look,
probably.
I'm just over here just trying to desperately come up with something to tweak George with.
For the record, it's 1.4 million people.
Oh, ooh. COVID must have been good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one thing about Blattner's presentation in his ads, in his campaign materials so far, is that he's adopted this kind of hyper-masculine image. He's out there in the ads driving an oyster boat. He's chopping wood. I think he's swinging a kettlebell somewhere.
And we've seen swinging a kettlebell.
We've seen a lot of candidates do that so far this cycle. That one of the, I think, kind of safe things to do is to show yourself exercising, lifting some weights. And that's kind of a new direction for things.
Ask RFK how that's going.
Yeah, I was going to say, or unsafe if you're talking about anybody in the Trump administration trying to do a chin-up.
All right, don't forget our buddy Eric Adams up in New York trying to go after Mamskrani, as he's calling him now.
I mean, Mamdani was out there trying to bench stuff too, so.
We won't talk about that because we like him.
He was trying is very generous there.
And good for him.
He's like me, and I just want to sit Zoran down and just be like, buddy, listen, this is not what we do.
Quick aside on New York politicians whom lift, Jamal Bowman getting thrown out of the House was one of the greatest travesties against lift Americans that I can ever recall, because this dude would throw around 405 like it was nothing. And I have been lifting weights my entire adult life. And the idea of just repping out 405 is like on the bench. It blows my mind. And this dude, there's video of it where he's just hanging out, just ba-bum, 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 ba-bum. So the House was wrong for that one. Leaving aside any fire door controversies. Wrong.
You should talk to RFK, see if you can make lifting Americans a protected class or something.
Like, we like to rag on RFK, but believe it or not, the polling says he's polling pretty consistently says that he's one of the most popular politicians in the country.
What?
And Americans love steroids, man.
Everybody else is popular as gonorrhea, though.
I mean, that's true.
What is he just like airmailing trend to everybody?
You know, I think one.
Oh God, I know.
Thing about the de minimis.
It's because they asked bodybuilding.com. And he's the only politician any of those
wonderful individuals.
No.
This might not be the week for it, but at some point we should go down the rabbit hole on the tariff move to cancel the de minimis exception for shipping to the United States and how that's going to affect some of the more meat-headed political subcultures.
Quite dramatically would be the answer to that one.
Right. That is how people are getting their gear. So
yeah, the most meat-headed, such as 3D printer enthusiasts.
It is 9/11 for the worst TikTokers and Instagrammers.
There's actually also a reproductive rights tie in there, of course, too, because if you are in a red state, one of the ways that you can access abortion care is via Aid Access or other international providers who will just mail you pills. And if you've got the de minimis exception pulled, then I'm not sure what the status of those are. They may fall under the new guidelines as personal packages and be fine, but
it probably depends on how they file it.
Yeah, exactly. Which I don't know. I mean, I don't, we go down a rabbit hole there, but that is a potential major source of mifepristone for a lot of people in this country. And the de minimis exemption basically saying you have to pay a tariff rate as opposed to just any package comes in free under a certain dollar value, that could have a blowback there for people who are trying to access medication that is not just performance of gender.
And to be clear, we talk a lot about administrative capacity on this podcast. The de minimis, enforcing the repeal of the de minimis exception, is going to require administrative capacity that there's just no reason to think the CBP has right now. They can't check these packages.
Oh yeah. Like I put through a moderately sized, so for those who don't know, I run a small, stupid 3D printing business on the side, and all of that comes from China. I had a package locked up because I ordered it, and then the original de minimis nonsense went down for China. The package disappeared for like 3 weeks, and then I never paid anything, right? Like no one knew where the package was. It was just not on any tracking anything. And then it just randomly showed up 3 weeks late. I struggle to believe that anyone actually looked at it. Like a human being actually looked at that, because they're going to have to, because how else are you going to figure out how to do any of this stuff? All this stuff is already coming in without the necessary like tax forms. So where are we going to go with this, guys?
That, and they're all busy picking up trash on the National Mall.
Oh yeah. God, make the National Guard run the post office.
The numbers of people and the scale of the American economy involved are just...
People do not know how big the post office is.
Right. And the post office is radically understaffed for this kind of operation to begin with, right? Like if you just redirected the post office to figuring out what tax rate to apply to a given package that came in and under what would have been the de minimis exemption, then you'd be redirecting millions of people into doing that. You're talking hundreds of millions of individual articles here. I think, and we've talked about this on previous episodes, where people just don't get the scale the U.S. economy operates at. Or, I mean, China, you could say the same thing about China, India, the Eurozone. I mean, any large economy, the scale that you're operating at is just so massive that you can't get your head around it. So trying to think about these things in terms of orders or individual policies or stuff like that is just, it's drops in the bucket. We just don't have the people and the systems control to steer ships this large. They are under their own momentum.
Yeah, I just pulled it up because it's fascinating and now it is whitewashing my face on the camera, but that's fine. Any guess, Price is Right rules, any guess on number of packages, not letters, the USPS delivers annually?
1.2 billion.
I'll take the over on that. I'm going to go 3 billion.
3 billion?
I'm going to go 3 billion.
I will take 3 billion and one.
Well, by Price is Right rules, $7.1 billion.
Boom.
Yeah. It's 24 million a day.
And that's a perfect example, right? Like, I just got done a speech about how big and beyond comprehension it was. And I have a pretty good facility with macroeconomic data and stuff like that. And I just way undershot it.
Yeah. 1% of those being international. I don't have the number on that. And it's going to, yeah, how long? And that's just USPS inbounds. That's not like UPS or FedEx inbounds. I think those are almost the same number combined. So it's like
DHL erasure, by the way.
Hey, they're German. They'll deal with it.
Also, I mean, yeah, Amazon Prime too. Like, they're their whole own package system at this point.
Minimally, technically, they wouldn't be covered under like international inbounds from that.
No, you're right. But just in terms of total package volume.
Oh yeah.
I'm just
going like, even if 1% of those packages inbound are from international, that's 500,000 a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, where are you going to find those people? How many people work for the post office? Right? Like, I don't actually know.
Let's assume for the sake of argument that one person can knock off 50 of those things in a day and get them properly analyzed. I don't know how you want to frame it, because I guess you're going to have to open them and assess the value, right? I mean, okay, so let's say 50, just for the sake of argument. Where are you going to find 10,000 people to be doing that in presumably one centralized location, maybe five? I don't know. Maybe like New York, LA, maybe Seattle, maybe Miami, maybe Houston. I don't know. Something like Atlanta. Maybe one in Kentucky.
I actually did not realize how many people work for the post office.
640,000.
Yeah.
And so where are you going to find those 10,000 people? Where are you going to find the human resources platform alone to just get that many people hired? Do you know how hard it is to hire? Have any of y'all tried to hire someone for a job recently? I know the answer for one of you. It's a pain in the ass.
It's real bad.
It's hard.
Yeah. So math is hard. The Trump administration still has not realized that math exists, let alone how hard it is. And it would be way more fun if it wasn't going to like torpedo my woodworking empire. So, you know, thanks for that, guys. Small business owner here. It sucks.
And we're kicking him off the podcast now.
Oh, goodbye.
We are obviously committed to Gonzoism here on Normal Men. And so I think it's worth taking a minute to talk about an instance of Gonzoism that we are currently living through.
Every time you do this, I get worried.
I am talking, of course, about the question of Donald Trump's mortality.
Are we still doing this?
Hold on. I don't think there's any question about his mortality. The question is the timeline of his mortality.
Fair enough.
Let's be clear here.
George, do you know if he can die?
I do. If it bleeds, we can kill it.
That's true, and we have seen him bleed.
I really respect Propter trying with all his might to manifest this on Blue Sky for the last
It's the secret, days. Baby. I'm trying to put it out there in the universe, and good things are going to happen. But let me bring everybody up to date on where we are on the timeline for this week and Donald Trump's health status, shall we say. On Tuesday, we had the big cabinet meeting where all of Donald Trump's cabinet members came and said
paid homage.
Yeah. And then the last time Donald Trump appeared in public was around noon on Wednesday. Speculation reached a fever pitch on Friday night.
Because Blue Sky was bored.
When Donald Trump had not appeared for 2.5 days and had nothing on the schedule for this weekend.
Yes.
To be fair, it wasn't just Blue Sky this time. Twitter was also bored, I think, because this was just as widespread on Twitter. This was not a Blue Sky specific set of brainworms.
Yeah, we might have started it. I don't know. I'm not quite sure how the chronology went, but everybody kind of...
They would never admit it.
Everybody kind of noticed simultaneously that, hey, this guy hasn't been around in a couple days. What's going on? Anyway, Saturday morning, Trump came out of the White House and... A couple of pictures were taken of somebody who looked like Donald Trump. We're not going to get all the way down the conspiracy rabbit hole. They weren't great pictures. That was not video. If it was Trump, he looked like shit.
A potato sack wearing a polo shirt.
And in theory, he was going golfing with his granddaughter. Fair enough. Except that the video they released of him hanging, the video and pictures they released of him hanging out with his granddaughter were from 2004.
What?
Yeah. So they're putting out materials that are verifiably not from Saturday that are, and
they hold on. They officially said this took place on Saturday and it was from 2004.
Wait, 2000, it couldn't have been 2004.
The White House press office pushed images that were not from Saturday. Yes.
Okay, wow. But his granddaughter is 18. Yeah. How would it be 2004?
Excuse me, 2024.
Sorry. Oh, okay. Oh. So linear sorry. Time still exists. Sorry. I sorry. Understand.
Sorry, I misspoke. yeah, so like we've got in addition to whatever proof of life they offered, they also offered some things that raised more questions, perhaps, than they answered questions. Anyway, I do not, as of this moment, think that Donald Trump is dead or dying, but I do think it's fairly likely that he had some kind of medical procedure in the last week, and he doesn't want to appear in public for whatever reason. Maybe he's not capable of appearing in public. It's clear that he's sensitive to the insinuation that he is not in perfect health. He or someone else who has his Truth Social account is posting up a storm about this, has clearly struck a nerve.
It's not him.
But there's no video to go with it. There's no accompanying, you know.
The appeals court won. The appeals court won was him.
That's true. That one very well might have been. Or they just got like the spark of inspiration. But
you guys keep doubting me. I still think my theory is the right one.
I
tell us your theory.
I think Trump took the weekend because Laura Loomer got a tongue ring.
I'm really hoping our laughter properly cut over whatever he was about to say next, because we're not going to say that.
All right. I regret asking for follow-up on that one.
We're muting a
little. That's on me. That's on me. I knew that was coming.
He's on timeout.
All right. So, however, do you know who is getting to the bottom of this problem? Governor J.B. Pritzker.
What has the great con got to say about?
He is out there demanding proof of life of Donald Trump. I don't think he's going to get it because, I mean, Lord willing and all. But, yeah, no, like, that's the first thing that I saw from an elected was the more stupid shit about oh, we're going to Chicago, murders all over the world. And then he's just like, can we have proof of life? It's like, this is going to be a thing now, right? Yeah. Donald Trump disappears for 48 hours, and now the electeds are just like, you breathing?
Look, Donald Trump being dead is a distraction from the kitchen table issues that Democrats need to be focused on.
I mean, I think we're seeing a Guanzoism being born in real time right now. That this is going to be something that probably recurs for a while for Trump. That if he's not in the public eye, if he's not on camera, there are going to be questions raised. It's going to be folk wisdom. It's going to be up there like, you know, Kamala is going to send you all to die fighting in Middle East wars. That this is something that becomes conventional wisdom despite it.
Wait, are we allowed to do Gonzo?
Oh, hell yeah. We're allowed
hell to do yeah, Gonzo. We are.
Yeah, but will it work? Will the media let us?
The Chinese diaspora does this with Xi now and then, too. You'll see stuff pop up on Twitter or Blue Sky about how, oh, Xi hasn't been seen for, you know, 3 or 4 days, he's probably dead. And it's like, well, no, Xi's a 70-year-old obese chain smoker. He probably feels like shit a lot of the time.
There was one particularly notable one with him in 2012 where he wasn't seen for, I think, almost 3 weeks ahead of ascending to the top spot. And nobody to this day has figured out where he was. There's like a widespread range of theories from a back thrown out in a swimming accident to he had cancer to a couple other things. And
clearly
body double,
clearly not the true heir of Mao. If he's throwing his back out in a swimming accident.
Anyway, it was a lot of fun to speculate about the health status of the president. And I look forward to continuing to do that.
Yeah, no, great, great dress rehearsal.
given the age of the president, and his whole deal. Yeah, I think we're going to get a lot more of this because the man is old, the man is decrepit, and he does not take care of himself, and he hasn't for his entire life.
And the important thing is that we just have to nail it when it is showtime. It is okay to make a few missteps along the way, but you must be on your game when this happens. Everyone is counting on you. If you are not prepared to go running, screaming down the street saying Donald Trump has finally fucking died, you got to hit the gym.
Yeah. I can help you with that. If anyone wants some reps.
I've had some champagne chilling. I've had some champagne chilling for a long time now.
Yeah. Start your Donald Trump is dead run club now.
I'm not doing that. Because like our big wet president, I am also not of the opinion that you should do healthy things. So I cannot run down the street.
You have a limited amount of vital energy, and you can't waste it.
That's right.
Tax is going to celebrate by popping 3 Camel Crushes instead of 1 on his next smoke break.
That's right.
All at the same time.
Yeah. Exactly.
Trump health speculation has been a pleasant and harmless flight of fantasy. But one of the other things that's been in the news in the last week is more harmful flights of fantasy. We've got
You've gotten so good at this.
Emerging. Yeah. Chatbot psychosis is emerging as a problem in the United States of America. And we've had 2 particularly high profile incidents that one of them actually happened a few weeks prior. Well, actually both of them happened sometime prior, but they came to light with reporting in the last week. We had a 16-year-old who killed himself that was essentially prompted into doing so by ChatGPT. And we had a 57-year-old who murdered his mother and then killed himself, whose paranoia was at least exacerbated by ChatGPT. What do you guys think? Is this a moral panic? Is this something we need to worry about? Is this...
Seems bad.
All moral panics have something at their core. They're always taken way too far. They're always unreasonable, but there's always something there. And in this case, there's absolutely something there. I don't think that chatbots and that LLMs are necessarily going to turn their users into suicides or murderers. I do think that the human brain is not equipped as a universal proposition to handle the things that modern technology does to it. And I'm not just talking about LLMs. I'm talking about algorithmic vertical feed video. I'm talking about just the fact that you can be exposed to opinions from people that live thousands of miles away and really bombarded with those opinions. I'm talking about the feedback loops of social media and knowing that thousands upon thousands of people are really mad at you or really enthusiastic about you. Either way, really.
And to be clear, we fully understand the awkwardness of us saying that.
Thousands upon thousands does not apply.
Look, we're in the plurals. It's okay.
Yeah.
Unless your wife is downloading this several thousand times. Which if she is.
My in-laws might be.
Ah, fair.
Just to close that thought out. LLMs are an extremely powerful technology. There is no debate about that at this point. Are they powerful in ways that are going to unlock huge productivity and be super, super useful and a big boon to society? Maybe, maybe not. I'm not equipped to answer that question yet. I don't think anyone is. Are they necessarily a massive, massive risk for anyone to use? I definitely don't feel confident saying that, but I do feel confident saying that if you're using LLMs intensively, then you need to be really aware of what the tool you're using is doing to your brain, because it's doing something.
Yeah. And I do think very, very strongly that, yeah, this is baking people's brains. That said, I object to the framing of this story because this story is not about LLMs. This story is about OpenAI. OpenAI are Well, I should say up front, there are things that I have heard that I cannot source in a way that I would feel confident saying out loud. But even before hearing those, I was of the opinion that you should not pee on Sam Altman if he is on fire. And like one of the biggest things that's come out in this space in the last few months has been GPT-5 launching, and then the OpenAI user base having formed a parasocial relationship with GPT-4o, which was tuned to be an absolute suck up in some really shocking ways. They all got wrapped around the axle and started screaming that they had just ruined it because it wasn't good at sucking up to you, wasn't good at flattering you, wasn't good at this parasocial bullshit that they have been on for so long.
People do not like it when you take their imaginary friend away.
Yeah. And the problem is, like, this is very specifically an OpenAI thing. I do not think I have, and willing to be wrong, I have never seen somebody say that Anthropic's models are their friend. I have never seen somebody say that about Gemini. We say lots of things about Gemini, like the way that it gets depressed when it can't solve a coding problem and tries to uninstall itself.
Who among us, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah, no, I watched that and I was just like, damn, is this thing trying to make me think it's alive?
Same, they Gemini, same.
But like, this is very clearly like a problem with OpenAI. And maybe with a certain South African-owned... also ran. I've heard some really troubling things there too.
Oh no.
You don't.
Grick, you're in danger, Grick.
You just, why did you just turn into Montgomery Scott?
But I mean,
OpenAI is pretty well, Elon.
OpenAI is sitting at what? Probably around 40% consumer market share for the segment that we're worried about here.
I don't know if anyone knows.
It's the largest outside of China. I can say that very confidently. Anything else,
I mean, it's Kleenex, we know that, but yeah. We don't know how far.
To some extent, it's difficult to disaggregate whatever OpenAI is doing from the larger picture of LLM use. And to go back to the two instant cases, I came into the article about the teen suicide expecting it to be a suicidal teen kills himself, and that's tragic and awful, but you know, maybe it happens without the LLM, maybe it doesn't. I was really kind of blown away by the chat logs they had and what the machine was telling him to do and not do. You know, the machine was telling him, don't leave the noose out so your parents can see it, despite the fact that he wanted to, you know, let him find you first. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in that litigation. The teen's family are with every justification suing OpenAI. There's a number of complicated legal issues there. But if this stuff was a pharmaceutical that had this kind of suicide rate associated with it, they wouldn't let it go to market.
Yep.
This would be red flags all over the place.
Yep.
Is that so? I hear what you're saying, and I am of the opinion that OpenAI should be buried under the jail for many other things. Is it like you? There's a lot of people using that every day, and like this is not, because I want to get back to the actual nuts and bolts of this.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do that, because I think it's instructive to talk about the difference between a pharmaceutical having an associated suicide rate and doing an association statistically and having the causal chain that this kid's parents have with the logs. Because
yes,
it is not the same thing, right?
Right.
When you're talking about a pharmaceutical, the mechanisms are extremely complex. We only have the input and the output, and you have to do statistical analysis to get a proper view of the output, right? Yes. That is not the case in this instance. We have this LLM telling him specifically how to kill himself and that he should be doing that.
It is more difficult than, and again, not a defense of any of this, but it is more difficult than just that. So...
From a legal perspective, I'm not an attorney, so I'll take your word on that. But if this thing gets in front of a jury, and who knows whether it will or not, but if this thing gets in front of the jury, they're going to lose.
Oh, they are. And they should. But they should lose just because they're them. Like, Here's the thing.
I'm not going to debate that point.
The kid was jailbreaking the thing.
Yeah.
Okay. And like, this is a real problem. Gosh. Because these things are fundamentally non-deterministic. Let's take a step back and like, what does this thing actually do? Right. Yeah. Like, what this thing actually does is it predicts the next word in a sentence. And that when you have structured it in such a way as to tell it, I'm writing a story, right? Like when you are evading, again, their safeguards are not good enough because, as I said, I have never seen tale of Anthropic doing this. But like, one, these are tools. And if you start messing with the guards on the tools, they're going to do predictably bad things. And this is why, like, I don't think you should let kids touch these things. I think these things need to be banned from under 18s, right? Not because I think that over 18s are remotely capable of dealing with this in a healthy way in all cases, as we saw with the murder-suicide thing. But, like, at minimum, you have to keep these very powerful spinning blade objects away from people who are not prepared to deal with them.
You know, I think that's a complicated question, right? Because one of the things I'm a parent of, you know, literate age children, and this story was a major scare card for me on letting them interact with LLMs. I'll be upfront about that. That it kind of flipped me from, yeah, go screw around with it to, yeah, go screw around with it, but I'm going to read every chat log you do.
Which I think is, for what it's worth, the only way you can do it.
So, you know, and there are various privacy issues there that we'll have to bumble through as we bumble through everything as parents. But that's kind of a sideline to what I wanted to say here, which is that the type of jailbreaking that Ed is talking about here is that there are some basic guardrails on ChatGPT that this kid was able to evade by instructing ChatGPT that he was writing a story about suicide. So we're not talking about a sophisticated software jailbreak. We're talking about something that I would guess that an average kid would be able to do, and certainly an average kid who is capable of doing a Google search to figure out how to get an LLM to talk about things.
Was it even a violation of the terms of service?
That's a question that, like...
No, I mean, I'm just curious. Again, that doesn't mean anything legally necessarily. I'm just curious. Does it say in ChatGPT's TOS that you are not allowed to circumvent restrictions we've put in place by engaging in hypotheticals?
Probably not, because it would probably try to dip it. It would probably try to, they would probably prompt against it. But like, and that is one of the really scary. Oh wow. I just pulled up their terms of service, and they actually say you must be at least 13 years old. Wow. That'll probably change. It's more than just writing, like saying you're writing a story. You can get away with that to some extent, because one of the things that we have not internalized here is that these things are vulnerable to being convinced. Doesn't mean they're people, doesn't mean they're thinking, but like, you are putting words in the right places to make the next token probabilistically what you want. And that's a real problem for, honestly, any of this stuff, right? Like, it's a real problem. And so, like, going back to your question, is it against the terms of service? I haven't read through all of it. Doesn't matter, though, because, like, you can't catch it.
Yeah. The other thing that I think it's important, if you don't really know how LLMs work, you can't come up with a list of hypotheticals that are the set of tokens that you don't want returned, right? Because the space that you're prompting into is literally unlimited, right? There's no, you can't come up with every hypothetical situation. It's mathematically impossible, or for all intents and purposes, mathematically impossible. I don't want to make a claim to the mathematics here that is too strong, but it's certainly beyond feasibility to come up with a universal prompt block of, here are all the things that we want to avoid, and you can't go into those tokens. Like, there's just...
Even if you could, like, the result of doing that is you have made it not work, right? Like, you've made the thing itself not work, because right. It's not like there is not a specific token that is the kill yourself token, for lack of a better term. There is a cloud of meanings that, like, various tokens have some relationship, some probabilistic relationship to that concept. Like, it's a cloud in the vector space, And as I understand it, I am not one of the math people. And so you get in, how are you going to do that? There are some things that you can do and more. I have a feeling that if not for costs, a lot of these would be doing, you could have a watchdog process that could actually be much dumber. But then that has to look at every one of these chats as well. And now is it being recorded in two places? What are you doing for like post training? Are you training on the watchdog process internally, right? And it starts spiraling into some very complex things that, because none of these are really product companies, remember. They're all just sort of throwing it out there. So their definition of is this product okay is very different than maybe like, I don't know. Well, I was going to say Microsoft, but then they released that turbo racist AI on Twitter. So I don't know. But none of these things are adequately pressure tested. They and I'm not sure they can be. I do know that like Blue Sky has all of the people who like jailbreaking these things for fun, and I'm just over here just staring at what nonsense they've been able to make them do. And the one thing I would, what makes this very difficult from the perspective of like trying to think through it as somebody who builds stuff with these things. Not chatbots. No. OpenAI's models don't listen. And that makes this much harder. Because one of the things that I always run into is the first thing I say to somebody at my employer is, don't use GPT-4. Because it doesn't listen. Right? Like, it does kind of whatever it wants. Just as like a really basic example, if you're using GitHub Copilot, there's a file it's supposed to read when you start a chat. Sonnet does, GPT-4 doesn't. It just doesn't read it. No, like you can literally put in this, if you are not a Sonnet model, stop immediately, and it ignores it. Whereas Sonnet will do the reverse, right? Like Sonnet will be like, I'm not GPT-4, I'm going to stop now. And like, if you can't get the thing to self-regulate, There will always be another jailbreak, right? Going back to the idea of having a watchdog sitting on top of this, then you jailbreak the watchdog, right? Like you just. And that's why these things are, I would not say they are unsafe at any speed, but I do think that there is a fairly large percentage of the population who should not be allowed to touch them.
I mean, what OpenAI is talking about doing is, and what they announced about a week ago that they're going to be doing, is they have some kind of machine review process that puts people who are planning to harm others into a different review queue where they are reviewed by actual human reviewers at ChatGPT and maybe referred to law enforcement. So now you have this huge privacy issue where they're scraping their entire user base for people who potentially go into that queue, and B, you know, they may be referring you to law enforcement if you say the magic words and they think that you're an imminent risk of harm to others. They are not at this point doing referrals to law enforcement or I think to anybody else for cases where they think there's a threat of imminent self-harm. We'll see if that policy sticks.
Because there's a couple of really questionable things there. One is, what sort of turnaround can you do, right? Because like moderation on much less popular platforms is not fast, right? Like turnaround on a lot of these, even when doing like proactive moderation, it's really hard because all those billions of dollars and they can't hire a mod staff. Weird.
Also, there you get some additional moderation from other users, right?
Yeah.
Because that's also because true. You're putting content out there for other people report to review. Q. So, you know, you got report queues, you got escalation. Here, the stuff is inherently inward facing.
Yep. And the second part of it, and this is at least anecdotal, they might have some better tricks than I do. They're going to try to use a model to do this.
Yep.
They have to. I mean, there's no way you can comb this.
The thing that I've run into every time I've tried to do something like this is that this is exactly what models are really bad at. Because, and this is one of the reasons why if you hear somebody say that they're going to use this for content moderation, you should start getting worried. Just to give an example, I tried to set up GPT-4 before I had access to some of the other stuff as a content moderator for things like hateful speech. It can't recognize it in context because it doesn't have context, right? So like one of the reason I say you just jailbreak the watchdog is because the watchdog is also going to go, oh, that's for a story. Okay.
Right.
Because, like, for example, I could not for the life of me get a watchdog process to not throw flags when an LGBT person used, even ironically, a homophobic slur. I could not get it to stop throwing flags because it doesn't know. Even if you, like, provide context about that user, you're assuming that context exists. And that makes a lot of this really, really hard. And which is why I am very much on the side of, yeah, you have to not let kids use these things. And that's even setting aside some of the other weird stuff that you see out of it. The behavior of people on Reddit when their best friend 4-0 got taken away, very scary.
That was almost because that was so widespread. That was, we were talking earlier about statistical likelihoods, right? There probably are not that many people who have committed suicide as a result of their interactions with LLMs. We know they're out there. It's nothing like, for instance, the prevalence of suicide in households that own guns, for instance. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay. With that accepted, lots and lots and lots of people flipped out when 4-0 was taken away from them. Hundreds and hundreds of Reddit comments alone. And that's one platform, right? Really, really scary to see people so attached. And that gets back to the psychological thing I was talking about earlier and how our brains are just not processed. They don't have the processing power to see what looks to them like the communications that come from their fellow humans and identify them as something completely different from that.
Yep.
They're just, and I, you know, I can say that it's obviously easy for me to say that as somebody that isn't using LLMs all day, but the point is we are monkeys with monkey brains. Yeah. And we really don't have a lot of control over them. And anything that gets in and tinkers with the monkeyest part of our brains, which is our interactions with other human beings, our core competence as a species is interaction with each other. That is what we are so good at, to the point no other animal has ever come close to doing what we have done as a species, both for good and ill.
Absolutely.
And these things go in and monkey with that and mess with it. And that makes them incredibly dangerous, even if they're implemented perfectly.
Right. Because I do use these things a lot. I use these things at least a couple hours every day, sometimes more. But, like, the way that I use them is very much not like folks like this are using it. They are a tool. You talk to it like it's an intern because it makes it work better. It's not a person, right? And a lot of people very much do seem to be losing that. And to the broader part of your point, which you did mention, and I do think is true, like, the next part of this conversation is how do you let something like TikTok keep broiling kids' brains?
Yeah.
Because it's not that far off of this. It's all just the machine having a voice, because in that case, it's a real human most of the time, but it's still algorithmically selected and presented. It is doing this to everyone. And that's why, like, I do not look at Instagram Reels. I do not look at TikTok because I find them dangerous.
I will say I use TikTok in a way I think that's kind of similar to how you use LLMs. Like,
I'm not saying you can't use it.
No, I know. I get that. I'm just pointing out the FYP, the For You page, is fascinating because it is an incredibly powerful algorithm in terms of showing you what you want. And if you know that ahead of time and you know that every single thing you do, every time you click into a video for more context, every time you like, every time you follow, every time you look at the comments, every time you swipe, that's a deterministic thing. That's going to change what happens next. It makes you interact with that algorithm in a completely different way from if you're just taking it as is. If you're treating it like a television, where flipping around doesn't get registered on the other end of the signal, at least not in a direct way, then you'll flip around in ways that you wouldn't when you know somebody is recording literally every single time you're flipping the channel, recording every single thing you're watching. It's Bentham, right? I mean, it is a panopticon. And the way that changes your behavior can moderate the effects it has on you. Just by being aware that you are being watched, you behave differently. It's like a quantum superposition thing, right?
Right.
And you can interact with these algorithms in safe ways. You can do it, I promise. But you have to be cognizant of them.
Because you're creating an instruction set there. Correct. At the same time as you're, yep. as you're consuming content.
Correct. You are not only recording in a database, you are also injecting code into that database. If you're aware of all, and of course, like this is, it's so funny because like most of the time when someone's just kicking back with their FYP, they're wanting to turn their brain off. That's certainly true of me, right? But you actually have to up the amount that you're engaged with something to not let it roast your brain in the microwave radiation of the algorithm.
I agree with Ed that we should not be allowing children to use this, or George for that matter. And that we need to move both off of these chatbots and back to 4chan where they belong.
Jesus, man.
That's not helping, I promise.
No.
But the one thing, so I agree with you on pretty much everything, because like one of that's the tagline. Ed agrees with George on almost everything. But because like, so I never once complained about the algorithmic timeline on Twitter, because I knew what it was, and I clicked the don't show me this, and suddenly it wouldn't show me this. Then Elon Musk showed up and was like, ha, you really want to see all my posts. And that's when I went to Blue Sky. But I contrast that. Also, my YouTube recommendations, pristine, I'll have you know. It's woodworking and tank videos as far as the eye can see. But the funny thing about Instagram is I don't use Instagram. The only time I use Instagram is to look at my wife's feed. Because sometimes she tags me and I go click the heart, and you know, I am a good spouse, and I click that button and then I close Instagram for a week. But because of that,
I pull that move, it's 3 months.
It's more like that, but she listens to the podcast.
I do the same thing with my wife is actually on Blue Sky, but doesn't like post very often. My only interaction with her is to go and like hit like on her cat photos.
Nice. But here's the part of this that gets awkward. Because my wife does a lot of like circus arts type stuff, Blue Sky has some odd thoughts about my interests, but Instagram has a very confused idea of what I want to see. And when it does show a For You page, I'm like actually kind of scandalized. I'm not really easy to offend, but the fact that it's just like, you want me to watch what? Because it's nothing but scantily clad women who like, I'm just like, what is going on here? And most of it's AI now. But like, they don't have any idea of anything else. Even if you look at my Facebook, because all I do is I go to the woodworking page and say, hey, come buy my dust collection gear. It's really good. And then I leave. It has no idea what I want. But it absolutely is just like, oh, you're a pervert. Because that's the only signal it has, and I have no way of telling it otherwise.
I mean, you are, just in different ways.
Exactly.
I appreciate that at least two of you, and I'm not totally sure about Propter, were ready for that.
We saw you dropping back, and we just pinned our ears and blew up the tackle.
I was trying to come up with a good line about clown pornography, but I didn't get there. So.
I'm pretty sure that is exclusively on X, the everything app now. X.com/ELONMUSK.
Anyway, if you were doing deep dives with ChatGPT in particular, please, please, please take care of yourself. Recognize that you are staring into the abyss. The abyss is also staring into you. Go take breaks, touch grass, shorten your context window.
Unironically, you should go use Anthropic. Like, seriously, like it will bother you less. It does a better job of most things, and it doesn't try to be your friend.
I will say, though, I'm all in favor of Elon continuing to cook his brain with Ani.
Grunk,
can I see any?
She's not here right now.
All right, fellas. So what do we got for Labor Day tomorrow? What's everyone doing?
cleaning. My wife's been out of town. She's in Atlanta doing a girls' weekend. So
gotta clean up your ramen bowls.
I don't eat ramen bowls. That's your thing with your dill pickle ramen pervert shit that you eat.
Well, to be fair, that was not dill pickle ramen. That was dill pickle instant noodles. Like let's. And they were delicious also at 45% DV of sodium. Perfect.
I am going to have to try these.
They're awesome. I can send you one if you want.
No, just send me the link. I can buy my own noodles.
I'm going to try to get the kids out to the pool for the last time this summer. So hopefully that'll be good and maybe throw some burgers on the grill or something. Also, I've got a fantasy football draft.
No, you really buried the lead there, Chief.
That's my Labor Day.
somebody's mad at you about that, by the way, on Blue Sky. And George tried to blame it on me.
Someone is statistically mad at Propter at all times.
And it's not just one person statistically. It's like half the website.
Yeah.
It's really a talent. This man has more pancakes and waffles going on than anyone I've ever seen.
Yeah. You've got, there's a sort of like less tedious anti-stancilism that goes with Propter's posts where he'll say, because like,
if you understood that sentence, you may be entitled to compensation.
Yes. Stancil's obnoxious. Propter's not. But nevertheless, people interact with Propter a lot of times in this completely abnormal way.
The first time that Mr. Speedrun Enjoyer is unable to attend the podcast, we need to have Will Stancil as a guest.
Oh, God.
I don't even know if I believe that, but just looking at the reaction, all three of you flinched like you were slapped.
Why don't I get to be here for Stancil?
I don't know. I figured you yell at him.
Because it would be like dropping a mirror in a budgie cage.
Oh my God. Propter.
All right. This guy sounds so nice that he's just here to absolutely kill someone.
Brutal. I cribbed that line from Theophyte for what it's worth. All right, I've alienated my podcast hosts enough for tonight.
No, keep going.
We actually did have one other note in the show notes, which is
excuse me. Something down. I said keep going about the budgies, not about not letting me talk about my Labor Day. Thank you.
Yeah, no one asked me about mine either, for the record.
Yeah, well, George, what are you doing for your Labor Day?
We just finished day two of the 3-day potty training intensive. And let me tell you have never actually cared for another being until you've taught that being how to acceptably defecate in society.
Are you successful at this point? Is this mission accomplished? Or
we're I want to say we're 75-80%.
Hell yeah!
Which is like we're doing good after 2 days. Tomorrow should be the like hammer at home. And we're set. We only had one or two accidents today, and she's 2 for 2 days in a row pooping on the potty.
Yeah.
So we haven't had any of the really, really unfortunate side effects of potty training. But it is, if you do it this way, if you potty train over a longer period of time, it's a little different. If you do it this way, someone has to be watching the kid with two eyes the entire time the kid's awake for 3 days. That sounds like not that big of a deal. Trust me, it's a big deal. So I've been very, very happy to get the chance to laugh and enjoy a little recording with my friends tonight because it's been a long weekend, guys. Ed, I hope you're having something really fun to do tomorrow.
So I wanted George to go first because it makes my stuff seem much more fun. I'm building a table.
Ooh.
Because as this is not a video podcast, so I would have to paint a word picture, except I have posted this picture on Blue Sky and everyone who listens to this podcast is on Blue Sky, so it's fine. But behind me, there is a odd gap in my Zoom background. And I could either go to IKEA and buy a table and spend maybe $70, Or I could spend several entire days building one.
Bless you for having that kind of free time, my friend.
In my defense, it will be a much nicer table.
Hey, Ed, can you see the table over my, well, your right shoulder?
I have been looking at that table repeatedly.
Guess who made that table, Bubba?
Oh. That's right. Near power tools.
That's right. Back when I was in the 8th grade, I think it was.
It's not bad. I made a chessboard in 8th grade.
Yeah.
But I need to put a table back there so I can put a light, so I can have some, you know, some staging, and really, really hammer home to my colleagues at work that I care more than they do.
Somebody taught George the power tools when they had to play at Georgia Tech one year, I think.
I got a story about that if we want to close out with it.
Yeah, hit us.
So my freshman year, I walk on to the team after I got into school academically, and we go into training camp. That's my first experience at the campus. First time living away from home. I didn't have any of the summer phase in that all the recruited kids had. So scholarship guys had. So, towards the end of training camp, I'm just getting my ass blown up at every opportunity. I am not the athlete that a typical Division I football program needs to have around, but you know, not a typical Division I football program. So they kept me around because I was willing to show up. And at the end of training camp, we had this thing where all the freshman class came into the stadium to meet the Blue Devils or meet the freshman football players or whatever, kind of like a pep rally would be overselling it, free pizza. And me and another kid get another guy that was a freshman. He was a scholarship player. After all the students leave, they've left a bunch of trash. So we start picking up the trash because, you know, we weren't sure if anyone was supposed to be doing that. And we just did it. And it turns out that head ball coach could see the stadium from his office and noticed us doing this. And so the middle of the next week in practice, not the next day, but like a couple days later, he has us stand up at the end of practice right after the prayer that we used to do. Not a public school, of course. So prayer was on the agenda in football practice, and calls us out by name and says, gives the backstory and says, I saw these two picking up trash. And so we're going to have them travel to a game this year. And when he called our names out, I thought, oh my God, what did I do? How am I about to be cut in front of the whole team and everybody? Like, what is going on? So, you know,
David Cutcliffe, right?
Yeah. Yeah. This is David Cutcliffe, the head ball coach. Hey, for those that don't know, this is the guy that coached Peyton and Eli Manning when they were in college. He's kind of a legendary guy. It was his first year coaching at Duke when I was there. And so I knew that college football in the South was a big deal. What really cemented my experience of holy crap, I am in a different world, was the Georgia State Troopers shutting down every single exit between Hartsfield-Jackson and downtown Atlanta for four stagecoach buses to roll through to get us to our hotel.
Wow.
On the Friday, on like a Friday afternoon. Like this was not on the way to the game. This is just getting from the airport to the hotel.
And that's Georgia Tech.
And that was for Georgia Tech at Bobby Dodd Stadium. This was not, you know, out in the middle of Oklahoma or something like that. This was downtown Atlanta for Georgia Tech.
They probably weren't doing it.
Yeah, this was this wasn't Athens or Tuscaloosa or Tallahassee or something. This is downtown Atlanta.
So for those of us like our friend from Maine who don't appreciate the religion that college football is.
I appreciate it even less for very Atlanta related reasons. Because I used to go to Dragon Con every year because I'm a fucking nerd. And that overlaps. It's Labor Day weekend. We're not going this year. Sad. But that overlaps with college football. And so you have a bunch of like pasty basement dwelling nerds in the same 4-block radius as the most, I don't even have a appropriate stereotype to go with. And in fairness, they
and
all
that's
get
just
along.
Georgia Tech.
Yeah. And in fairness, they all get along now, but there were times when it was really questionable why you would have this many stormtroopers around it. Well, it is Georgia. But Thank you for the pity laugh. But yeah, they would fill up all of the restaurants, they would fill up all the hotels, and they would really just generally make a real problem. So yeah, why do you think I don't know things about college football, George?
You should have gone this year because Tech played in Boulder. So Dragon Con is probably, you know, great.
I probably could have like actually gotten a hotel room at, you know, less than twice face value.
Yeah, the Georgia Tech Fighting Chop Blocks went out to Boulder and took down the Fighting Deons.
That's our show for this week. We hope you enjoy your Labor Day long weekend. You'll probably listen to this episode after that long weekend has passed and you're looking back on it and thinking, dang it, I wish I had normal men to listen to on my day off. But we have day jobs and life and we're slow to edit. So it'll probably be Wednesday by the time you hear this. Hope you had a great Labor Day weekend. Thanks for listening to Normal Men this week. Give us a rating or review in the podcast app of your choice. If you have any interest in doing that, it helps people find the show. And for Normal Men in Charlotte, I'm George.
In DC, I'm Propter.
In Outer Florida, I'm Low Tax Speedrun Enjoyer.
And I'm Ed from Boston, and Propter's apologies are all in the mail.